This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
From Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater and another episode in the series Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. We invite you to take your seats as Matthew Slade unfolds The Secret Gray Man.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. Time, 12 a.m. Place, my apartment. Lights were low, soft music playing. Flames from the fireplace reflected in two brandy glasses. The setting was perfect. The company.
Divine, Matthew. Simply divine. The apartment is so soothing.
All right.
Wasn't that the doorbell?
Yes.
Are you expecting anyone?
Only my grandmother. She drops by every evening with a fresh case of root beer.
Matt Slade?
Yeah, right.
Special delivery letter. Sign here, please.
Thank you.
Who's it from? Granny?
Yeah, in a way.
Business, Mr. Slade?
Business.
I am sympathetic, understanding, and willing to make sacrifices for a rain check. Good night. I'll let myself out.
The letter was from Gray Durant, and it was in code. I'd met the secret Gray man, Durant's tag in cloak and dagger circles in Korea. Gray was G2, one of four men assigned to top secret work. The code was born there, worked out one night before Gray, I, and two other men, Sanderson and Rogers, went across the line. It was involved and was a one-for-all agreement. One of those things that men do when they know they're going to die. The slender thread to luck. Sanderson and Rogers were killed. Gray and I had never invoked the agreement until now. I burned the note, threw my toothbrush and an extra cylinder of cartridges into a suitcase, and headed for my car. I drove along the coast toward Morro Bay. Gray lived in what he called his castle. The place overlooked the bay and seemed carved out of the cliff. The huge rock in the ocean, Morro Bay's landmark, was more noticeable and more accessible. Gray was still cloak and dagger. If the letter meant what I thought it did, he could be dead. A filling station loomed ahead on the highway. I wheeled the Continental into the pump area.
Yes, sir. That shell filler up?
Yeah. You got a phone?
A telephone booth round side.
Thanks. Second step in the agreement. Contact before approaching. Customary precaution. Gray?
Who is it?
Matt Slade. I got the letter. Are you in trouble?
Maybe now. I didn't send it.
Sanderson or Rogers?
Dead man, remember.
Someone else. A nice setup for a kill.
Don't sweat it, Matt. Will you follow me?
I've been so busy playing Superman, I didn't notice. Gray, where shall we meet?
In the trap for my killer.
Well, I can set it up alone. It was my goof.
We'll go together. There's a hotel called the Grand House on Morro Bay. Register. I'm known in the village. So we'll dig into the handy-dandy disguise kit. Code contact will be Marcy.
Marcy, huh? The glass house, Isn't there something about people who live on rocks shouldn't build glass houses?
You killed me, Matt.
I hope not, Gray. I hope not. I walked back to the car. Man was standing beside it, peering inside. He was back East New York type, sharply dressed. I tightened inside.
This your car?
Yeah.
Got one just like it.
Over there.
Pointed toward what could have been the Continental's twin, except his had a blonde inside.
My wife. Honey, this is Mr. Slade. Read your registration. My name's Herbert Edwards.
Herbie! Do you have to talk to every Tom, Dick, and Harry on the highway?
Nice talking to you, Slade.
I headed toward Morro Bay, keeping an eye on the rearview mirror. No one was following me, at least no one that I could spot. I reached the glass house, its three stories, a thousand eyes blinking at the sea. I registered, took the elevator up. The room looked all right, wasn't bugged, so my unknown killer was behind me somewhere. I finished a pack of cigarettes and decided to get some sleep. Morning came, but not too soon. I dressed and went downstairs to the desk.
No, Mr. Slade, no messages. You came in late last night, I see. Oh, are we having a brunch at the pool this morning?
Is that the custom?
Oh, yes, indeed. The sea air is so, appetizing.
Yes, well, we'll have brunch at the pool. Hmm?
The pool is on your right. Oh, don't walk through the glass doors. That can be nasty.
Finding the pool was no problem. I remembered not to walk through the glass doors. I edged over legs and arms in various degrees of sunburn, looking for someone who might resemble Gray. People in bathing suits resemble other people, never themselves. A waiter appeared, ushered me to a table near the diving board where a group of teenagers were playing water tag. He took my order. By the time my scrambled eggs arrived, I was soaked to the skin. A waiter, could you find me a table a little further back from the pool?
Yes, sir.
Don't move. I was just getting up enough courage to speak to you.
Her voice indicated that she was gorgeous. I turned for a good look. She was. But I could see of her.
I belong to the Cotton Stage Journal. Over there.
She indicated a seersucker suit. A character in it smiled blearily, raised his scotch at a passing bikini.
But he likes me to be friendly.
I couldn't catch all she said because I noticed a charm bracelet with Marcy in chunk-sized letters. I'm very friendly, too.
That's wonderful. Oh! Oh!
What's wrong? You got a cramp? She nodded and slowly disappeared into the water, and I went in after her.
That girl is gone.
Okay, now you're all right. I've got you. Here, let me help you. She's all right now. She's all right.
Oh, hold on.
Yeah, just let her go. She's all right.
Well, let me help. Hey, Slade, it's Edward. Old Herbie Edward.
Yeah, well, will you let go of her, please?
Sure. Hey, imagine running into you here.
Yeah, well, just let me get her up the steps, will you?
Right, okay. I'll put her over there. Now, keep back, folks.
Herbie, you have to get involved in everything.
What in the world is going on here? Somebody trying to drown my little gal?
It was Gray, southern accent, pot belly and beard.
She almost drowned. Slade here says
that. Well, Mr. Slade, I surely do thank you. Now, I want to repay you. Big Charlie Winston don't let things just go by. Now, if you folks will let us through.
Gray, Marcy, and I sloshed our way through the lobby. It took 20 minutes to change clothes and get to Gray's suite. I knocked. Marcy opened the door, grinned at me, and then locked it after I entered.
You didn't spot me.
Well, that's quite a get-up you're wearing, Big Charlie.
Anyone tried to contact you?
No, but Edwards thought he might...
Edward?
The other clown in the pool was trying to save
him. Yeah, the one I ran into, Edwards and his wife, on the way down here.
Ever seen him before, or her?
No, I can't tie them in anywhere, but there's...
There's a possibility.
Or just leave us.
Out on a limb. Mr. or Miss Unknown knows about the agreement. How, we will figure out later. But they know. They know about the call. So, around 5:30, see what gives for the cocktail drop.
I slid onto a seat in the bar and glanced around. The terrace dining room was crowded. There were a few couples on the dance floor. None looked in a killing mood or even interesting, so...
Martinis aren't me, Anne Helfrich. Are they? I mean, I'm not likely to get something horrible if I keep drinking, remember?
She was young and beautiful and maybe lonesome, which I doubted. Maybe something else.
Like developing an allergy to olives or something?
That depends. How many have you had?
Four. This place is pretty dull.
It should start to liven up soon.
Oh, it has. I'm Miss Albert. Who are you?
Matt Slade.
What do you do, Matt?
I'm a private investigator.
Are you private investigating now?
No. Vacation. You?
Vacation. From here to L.A. to Mexico City to Honolulu.
Poor little rich girl?
Poor little poor girl. Secretary from Sacramento who saved her money for...
For one big kick.
One big husband hunting expedition. Want to marry me now or later?
Would you like to dance?
Coward. I'd love to.
Lisa felt good. Perhaps too good in my eyes. She danced well, easily. Over her shoulder, I saw Gray and his Captain Handy disguise come in with Marcy. He looked about the bar, then headed for the terrace, Marcy following. Then he spotted us on the dance floor and started toward us. I could feel Lisa's back muscle tight briefly, then...
Well, now, Mr. Slade, you're doing all right by yourself. Son, I thought you were a stranger here. Introduce me to the lovely little lady.
Lisa Albers, this is Marcy, and
Big
this...
Charlie Winston, mighty pleased. Now, you stop stepping on her pretty feet, Slade, and both of you come and join us for dinner.
Gray led the way to a table, one which gave him a full view of the dining area and the bar, and ordered for all of us. Proceeded to charm Lisa out of her life story. She had reached the age of 18 when we were interrupted by...
Wade, Herbie Edwards. You remember, honey. Don't get up. I just wanted to say how much I admired what you did this afternoon. And buy a drink. For all of you.
Everybody likes a hero. Sit down, Edwards. Now, honey, you sit over here.
Gray was playing his role to the hilt, but he was suspicious of Edwards. So was I. Gray and Edwards babbled on, with Gray leading the conversation. Marcy tried talking to Honey, but Honey just didn't like to talk. Lisa was quiet. I glanced at her. She seemed to be no more than what she'd said. Then...
Listen, everybody, I would like to contribute something. I know a crazy little place called The Cave. Very avant-garde. I invite all of you to be my guest.
On a secretary's salary?
Please.
That's the best little old idea I've heard all evening. Come on, let's go.
Call old Herbie and Honey in. We'll take my car.
Why don't we take Matt's car? You do have one, don't you?
Lisa raised her eyebrows at old Herbie, who would have had trouble finding his car, much less driving it. I nodded to her, and we trooped toward the parking lot. As we reached it...
Oh, Don, wait for me, please. I forgot something.
Oh, what is it? I'll go.
No, it'll only take a minute. Just pull the car around to the front.
Lisa ran back inside the hotel as we piled into my car, and then discovered that my keys were in the suit I had so hastily shed. I started to go back for them, but Edwards protested.
We'll take my car, and I'll drive. I'm not that drunk, old friend.
Edwards got out and headed for his car, which was about 50 feet away.
This ain't kind of old Herbie.
The front of Edwards' car disappeared in smoke. Stunned, we all ran toward the car. I reached the car, dragged Edwards clear. He was badly hurt, but still alive. An ambulance took Herbie away, Honey with him.
What happened to Lisa, Gray? Matt?
I don't know.
Surely she heard the explosion. The siren. And she didn't come back.
She didn't intend to come back. Lisa isn't the one behind it. There's someone else.
There's one point you masterminds are forgetting. Edwards' car had the bomb. Not Matt. Cars looked alike. Was it a mistake?
A killer wouldn't make a mistake. And this, Lisa wanted him to.
Come on, Matt. What are you selling?
She wanted us to take my car, remember? Not Edwards. And she thought we were. Look at my registration, Gray.
Herbert Edwards, 624 Willowbrook. She switched.
I stopped to ask the desk clerk if Lisa Albers had checked out. Lisa had never checked in. When I reached Gray's suite, he was standing at the window with a pair of binoculars. Marcy was curled in the corner of the couch watching him. Gray handed me the binoculars.
Look, beyond the rock in the bay.
Okay. What am I looking for?
A yacht. 50-footer. Well lighted. About halfway. There.
Yeah, got it. I don't see anyone on board. She's riding low.
Yeah. I can see that bay from my house, Matt. I keep an eye on ships coming in and out. I know most of them. I don't know that one, the Moonstone.
Yeah, go on.
The Moonstone showed up the morning you received the letter. No one came near her. No one left her. Until
you got my call.
Right. After you called, a woman left the boat in a dinghy. I think that woman was Lisa.
Come on now, Gray, you're reaching.
Maybe. I want to go out there and find out. Are you game?
How do we go? Boat, bus, plane?
We drive out to the rock and then swim. I have scuba suits in the costume.
You're not going to take Marcy, are you?
I'm not going to leave her here for him to find. Come on, let's go.
Gray drove along the road leading to the rock, then parked the car in a deserted section. We donned the frogman suits and slipped into the water. The boat looked far away. I had the underwater torch. Marcy and Gray were ahead of me in the water, their heads bobbing. To an observer, we would appear to be seals, we hoped. As we neared the Moonstone, I listened for voices of someone on board. I heard nothing. I followed Gray and Marcy around the bow silently. Gray beckoned to me, pointed to a spot just above the waterline. I flashed the torch briefly, long enough to see a nice, splintered hole, man-made. The dinghy was gone. I saw a rope dangling, reached for it, scrambled aboard, crouched in the shadows listening. It was silent. Light streamed from the open cabin door. I went toward it. Gray was right behind me. He had a gun. Mine was tucked easily where I could reach it. I started down the cabin way, 1,000 icy spiders crawling down my back. Then, I saw her.
What is it?
Lisa. Lisa. She was crumpled against the bunk, her head angled up. She moved slightly. Saw her.
Matt?
Don't try to move, Lisa. I knelt down, cupped her head in my hands. Her hair was wet, sticky, with blood. Gray stood silently, cursing.
He thought I was dead. The four of you made an agreement in Korea.
Don't try to talk.
One of them is still alive.
Yeah. Which one?
I'm sorry, Matt. I didn't know what he was going to do.
It's all right, Lisa. We'll get you off. We'll get you a doctor. Gray helped me lift her. It was very light. Water was rising on the cabin floor. Gray turned to glance around. Leave it. There's nothing here. We've got to get her off.
She's dead. Leave her here, Matt.
Gray took her from my arms, put her on the bunk. I looked at her, wondering why she had to die like this. Then Gray took my arm, pulled me up the cabin way. Marcy was waiting for us. Automatically, numbly, I followed Gray and Marcy over the side. We swam quickly away, then saw the boat as its lights flickered, went out, and the water sucked it down slowly.
How could he just... You don't mind if I cry, do you?
Yeah, we all need someone to cry for us sometime.
Sanderson or Rogers?
But he said they were both dead. You saw them die.
Yeah, we saw them hit. We saw them fall. We thought they were dead. We were all expendable, Marcy, and we knew it. If only one man got back alive.
We didn't stop to make sure, Marcy. We couldn't. We reported them missing, later dead.
And now one of them is too late alive. Well, we can't check the boat's registry tonight, so...
Well, we draw him out.
Right. On the drive back, we outlined a plan. We reached the hotel. I went to my car, checked for superfluous wiring. There was none. Gray, parked across the highway, blinked his headlights once, indicating he had seen me. I started the car and turned onto the highway. I drove slowly, Gray staying a good half mile behind. Traffic was slow. Several cars passed, but none stayed with me. I reached the turnoff to Gray's estate, made the turn, then started up the hill to his private road. I kept watching the rearview mirror. When I was halfway up, I saw headlights make the turn. The gates to the estate were open. Looked back for the lights. They had disappeared. Gray had given me the key to the front door. I had trouble fitting it into the lock. Then I felt someone behind me.
What's wrong?
The key. Feel it.
Graphite. He's already inside.
Where's Marcy?
Right here.
She knows what to do. Go ahead, Matt. Just give me 5 minutes cover.
Marcy and Gray became part of the shadow. I put the key in the lock, turned it, and entered the house. It was dark. I knew from Gray's briefing that I was in an entry hall. I crouched. I ran for the drawing room. I straightened and stood just inside the door, waiting.
Quite a show, Matt. What did Gray call this? Break out the light? Hold it, buddy, right there.
I swiveled toward the sound of his voice, but he had moved. The cold, empty hole of a revolver was pressed against the back of my neck. So I held it.
Now you turn around, son, and you put your hands against that wall. Higher. How many minutes did Gray give you for this razzle-dazzle with me? 5? 1 to go.
Sanderson.
Oh, baby, what a memory. Yeah, Sanderson, but not so dead, huh? You should have made sure.
Yeah, I will this time. Sanderson, baby. You went over the lines, huh?
Mm-hmm, with all the goodies, buddy. All that classified info. What is that nasty word? I deserted. No, defected. You don't approve.
No.
I didn't think you would. Neither would our big hero, the secret gray man. You're both too...
Why don't you try square? Fits in with your philosophy.
Huh.
What happened? They sending you back on a goodwill tour?
Uh-huh. They said, Sandy, baby, go spread words of joy to those poor, lost Americans.
Yeah.
Guess who I saw when I hit Frisco? Old buddy Matt Slade, True Blue, an honest Indian Slade. And then I learned another old buddy, Gray Durant, was on the coast. My orders? Eliminate the Botsy twins.
How'd you find out where Gray lived?
Oh, well, I just called the CIA and asked. You kidding? We got boys on your side of the street, too.
What about Lisa?
Oh, Lisa. Oh, I moan for Lisa. She dubbed the Nathan Hale of Morro Baby.
I'm enjoying your story, Sanderson, but if we're playing wipeout, let's play.
No, we're going to wait for Daddy Gray. Yeah, you've been playing bird dog ever since I sent that letter. And poor Lisa, she was dumb, man, dumb. She couldn't spot the gray man. He wasn't Edwards. Well, that means the jolly southern planter. All right, come on out, Cornpone, wherever you are.
You guessed wrong.
Now, you don't lie to me, Matt. I've cased this place, baby. It's full of gimmicks. Hidden panels, whole bit. He's right over there. See, boy? See that moonlight shimmering and shining on that painting? We're right behind it. It's a monk's room. A secret room for the secret gray man. And watch me aim for the eyes. Hold it steady, Matt. I got two hands and two guns. You still alive, gray man? Watch me get old buddy boy here.
Suddenly all hell broke loose. The room came fire with light. I was blinded. So was Sanderson. The shot came from the window, thudded into the wall beside me. I jumped for Sanderson as he turned to fire at the window. I hit him hard, trying for the guns. He hit his stomach with his elbow, slammed me back against the marble coffee table. I twisted aside, but he caught the edge of the table with his chin. Well, that was it. Where in blazes were you?
Temper, Cass, your temper. In the monk's room. I'll be digging plaster out of my face for weeks.
Yeah, well, it looks good on you. Sort of Van Gogh effect. And Marcy fired that shot, huh?
Yeah, she's not much of a shot. She almost got you.
So, the secret gray man remained alive. And secret. Sanderson was happy to talk about his colleagues and their activities. As he said, his heart belonged to America. I headed home for San Francisco. As I passed the giant crouching rock in Morro Bay, I thought of Korea and the four men crouching in the giant shadow of death, and wondered if the agreement, that slender thread to luck, was not, after all, the thread which led to death, and to near death, or the secret gray man.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. I don't know quite how to begin this letter, except to say that it may sound fantastic to you, perhaps even a joke. But please believe me, I am serious, and the situation is serious. A man is dying, yet he has nothing wrong with him. He believes he's going to die 5 days from now. And so, Bart LaFay is dying. A strong, healthy man is dying because of witchcraft. I know this sounds incongruous, anachronistic.
In this 20th century. But if you will come to Valou, Louisiana, you will see for yourself and perhaps be able to help. Sincerely, Doris Gordon. Sure, I laughed when I sat down to read Miss Gordon's letter, but the laugh stopped in Valou, Louisiana.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Death is a Doll.
But, Mr. Holliday, you don't believe this, do you?
Susie, as my old grandfather used to say, there's no such thing as a sure bet or a sure loser.
I don't get it.
Well, to quote the time-worn passage from Shakespeare, there are stranger things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamed of in your philosophy.
Who's Horatio?
That's beside the point.
But, Mr. Holliday, she says witchcraft. Now, that's just... it's imposterous.
Atta girl, Susie, you never let me down. You had to hunt for it, but you found the wrong pronunciation.
That's beside the point.
Yeah, it could be. But something tells me that Valou, Louisiana, offers interesting possibilities. Before I took off for Louisiana, I went to the Star Times and did a little research. You know, it's surprising what a person can find out about things he thought went out with the oil lamps, horse cars, and witch trials. But look at the bustle. Everybody thought it was dead. But now look. Well, just look. Anyway, what I learned made me change my mind a little about that letter from Doris Gordon who met me at the station at Ballou. 5 minutes after I got off of the train, we were driving along a dusty back road in her little car.
I didn't think you'd come, Mr. Holliday.
Well, I never refuse a chance to get mixed up in something that sounds different.
Or insane?
Well, what's the difference? Automobiles and radios were different when they came along. Before that, they were insane.
But this is different. We're in the 20th century. Salem and the witch hunts are history.
History? Well, to bat a cliche into center field, history repeats itself.
I know. Oh, by the way, no one must know why you're here, Mr. Holliday.
Yes, why not?
Because these people are fine and honest, but they're liable to resent a stranger.
Oh, so what happens?
I want you to pretend to be my cousin.
Glad to. But won't they know you haven't got a cousin?
No. I teach school here. I've been here only 6 months. No one knows much about my personal life. They've come to trust me and like me, I think. And they'll accept you because of it.
Fair enough.
Now, I board with the LaFays.
LaFay? Oh, your letter mentioned a Bart LaFay.
Yes. He's the youngest son.
And he's dying, so you said.
Yes. In 1 month, he's become almost a dead man.
Why? What did the doctor say?
He said there's nothing wrong with Bart.
But there has to be.
That's what I told myself. I told it to Bart. But Mr. Holliday, he knows he's going to die because someone has told him.
Who? Who told him?
I don't know who started it, but now everyone in Ballou knows it. It's been like a snowball. Building, building, building.
You're in love with Bart?
Yes, I am.
All right, but, well, I don't see what I can do to help.
You've got to. It was only by chance that I saw your advertisement in the Star Times, a newspaper published in a city hundreds of miles from here. Remember? Adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything. Write Box 13. I had to write to you.
Just a minute, Miss Gordon. Let me ask you one question.
What?
Have you gone to the authorities? The sheriff, for example?
Of course I have.
And?
Mr. Holliday, the law can't help when you're fighting something you can't see.
So I was taken into the LaFay home as Doris Gordon's cousin. There was something about the house, an aura of fear that hung over it like a deadly pall. Bart's mother, his father, and his two older brothers seemed to have accepted the fact that Bart would die. Die when he said, in 2 days. That night, Doris arranged for me to be alone with Bart in his room. The house was located near the edge of one of the big bayous, and somewhere outside in the night, the strange, eerie animal sound seeped through into the room where I sat with the sick man. How do you feel, Bart?
Not fit, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, now look here, Bart. The doctor says there's nothing wrong with you.
Ain't nothing he knows. Ain't nothing he can know.
Now, look, a man just doesn't die without something being the matter.
I got just 2 days now.
Oh, Bart, that's nonsense. Now, snap out of it.
You just don't believe it, do you, mister?
No. No, I don't.
Then why don't you ask down in the village? Ask anybody.
About what?
About what's happening to me. People seen it happen before, and there ain't nothing nobody can do. Ain't nobody can help. There ain't nothing.
Doris! Doris! Doris, get some water.
Oh, we can't swallow when he's like this.
No. Here, Bart. Come on. Sit up. Sit up. Let yourself breathe.
It's getting worse. It's like somebody tightened a rope around my neck. And soon it'll get so tight I can't breathe no more.
Bart, you mustn't say that.
Ain't nobody can help. Nobody.
Doris.
What, Dan?
Where's the doctor?
In the village.
I'm going there. You stay here with Bart.
All right, take the car.
There's only one doctor?
Yes, Dr. Brennan.
All right. Now don't leave Bart. I'll be back soon.
I'm sorry, Holliday, but there's nothing I can tell you. There's nothing wrong with Bart LaFay.
You're sure of it?
Look, anything that drags a man down from 200-odd pounds to 150, I'd know about. Maybe I'm just a village
doctor. Oh, I didn't mean it that way, Dr. Brennan, but as you say, a man can't lose over 50 pounds and look as Bart does without a cause.
I know that as well as you do.
Yes, well, better than I do. So let's be honest with each other.
Honest? What do you mean?
Because you're a doctor and because you're rational, logical, and reasonable, you won't let yourself accept the only explanation of Bart's illness.
I can't listen to any such nonsense, Holiday.
Is Bart's condition nonsense?
You're supposed to be an intelligent man.
Yes, and so are you.
Because I am, I won't think about it.
You've never seen it happen before.
No.
But you've heard about it.
Anybody who lives among people who believe in it has heard about it.
All right. Now, Doctor, let's say what we're thinking.
I'm not thinking anything.
Bart Le Fay is dying because he's the victim of witchcraft.
You don't believe that.
If you mean witches, charms, potions, and that stuff, no. I'm as hard-headed as you are. But Bart believes it.
Why, it's so ridiculous.
To you and me, yes. Maybe a hypochondriac is, too. But to him, his imagined illnesses are real. You don't laugh at him and send him away, do you?
Why, of course not.
And I'll tell you why not. You know his illness is in his mind, so you play along, comfort him. Because if you didn't, you know he'd become worse, simply because he'd think he was.
Well, all right. Supposing you're right about Bart, what can we do about it?
You've told him there's nothing really wrong.
100 times. There's nothing else I can do.
But I might be able to help.
How?
Find out who started this thing and why it continues. If we destroy the cause, Bart will get well.
Do you expect me to help?
Won't you?
Holiday, I'm a doctor, a physician, a member of the association. If I poked around in something like that, what effect do you think it'd have on my reputation?
Yes, I see your point. And it's up to me alone.
I'll help you, up to a point. Beyond that, well, it's all yours.
Fair enough. Now I've got to talk with the people here.
You won't get very far.
Why not?
Because not one of them will say anything or lift a finger.
Because they're scared too?
That's it.
Doctor, Bart Le Fay has only tomorrow and the next day to live. Unless I can lick this. And I'm going to try. I left Dr. Brennan and went back to the Le Fay place. I had to talk to Doris alone and later in the darkness outside.
Dan, it's too fantastic, too weird.
Now listen to me, Doris. I did a lot of reading before I came down here. Know what I found out?
No, what?
In the last 10 years, there have been over 100 cases of so-called witchcraft. As recently as 1939, a man on trial for murder claimed self-defense on the grounds that the person he killed had charmed him, hexed him.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But look in the newspaper files.
But this is the 20th century.
It could be the 120th, Doris. And still, people will believe what they want to believe.
Do you believe it?
No. No, there's no power on earth that can kill like that. The only power lies in the victim's mind, in his will to believe.
And Bart?
Believes it so strongly that he's dying.
He can't die. He just mustn't.
Look, who started this? There had to be someone that planted that suggestion in his mind.
No one. There isn't a person in the village in this whole parish who doesn't like Bart.
But there has to be, Doris.
It must be some horrible, malicious joke.
The joke would have been called off before this.
Then I don't know.
If I'd go into the village tomorrow, what would I learn from the people?
Probably nothing. No one will come near here. I have to drive in for supplies every day. Bart! That was Bart!
Come on. Doris and I ran into the house, and the Fays were standing near the door of Bart's room, staring at the closed door. Terror in their faces. I ran past them. Bart! Bart! Doris, get the lamp. Hurry.
Here. Oh, Bart! Bart!
He's all right. He just fainted.
But why? Why?
Here's your answer.
What? What's that?
Doris, shut the door. Keep the rest of the family out of here.
Wait out there, please.
Blow out that lamp.
But...
Blow it out.
What are you looking at? Is there somebody in the clearing outside?
No. No, not a soul. I didn't expect to see anyone.
You didn't expect?
Look. This charm that made Bart scream was tossed in through this window, Doris. And nothing supernatural or magical about it. It was a human being who tossed it in.
But why?
To let Bart know he has only 2 more days to live.
And now back to Death is a Doll, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
It wasn't pretty, that charm. The way it was made with feathers and leather and bits of bone gave me a cold chill. I stuck it in my pocket and then took it out again. It was silly, but I didn't want the filthy little thing near me. Bart came too. We made him comfortable, and I spent the rest of the night sitting by his bed. Then the next morning, Saturday, Doris drove me into the village. While she did some errands, I went into the general store.
Morning, mister.
Oh, good morning.
Can I do something for you?
Well, I...
Stranger here, ain't you?
Yes, I just came in yesterday afternoon. I'm Miss Gordon's cousin.
Oh, sure. Fine girl, Miss Gordon.
Yes, she is.
Boys, this here's Miss Gordon's kin. Cousin. Them's Ed Masters.
Hello, how are you?
John LaTouche.
How do you do?
Tuck Wilson.
Hi.
And the rest of them.
How are you?
Staying in Valu a spell, Mr.
Name's Dan.
Just call me Pop. Everybody else does. Though Tuck here's about 10 years ahead of me.
Oh. Okay, Pop.
As I was asking, staying long?
Well, I don't know.
Vacation?
Sort of.
Oh, staying here at the hotel?
No.
Oh, right in the old Girard cabin, huh? Folks do for vacation.
No, I'm staying with the LaFays. Well, I must have said something wrong.
That's one mighty good way to clear the store. Just mention LaFays.
Aren't the LaFays liked?
They was.
Was?
You come in here to buy something, mister?
No, I...
Well, then I gotta get busy. I gotta get some stock put away.
Oh, now, just a minute, Pop.
Huh? Want something?
I want to know something. Maybe you can tell me.
Depends. I don't know much.
I'll make it worth your while.
You can put away your money, mister. If and I wanted to make talk, I wouldn't take no pay for it.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
You ain't staying long with the LaFays, are you?
I don't know.
You better know.
Listen, Bart LaFay's dying.
Is he?
You know he is.
He's been ailing, not been fitting.
Pop, who's doing it to him?
I ain't got no idea what you're talking about.
I think you have. You can't stand by and see a man die like that.
Sooner or later, we all got it.
Pop, if you can tell me anything
that... ain't no use asking me. But if you want advice, mister, don't stay no more at the LaFay's. I gotta get back to work.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Papa. Well, it was useless to try that anymore. I went outside and stood there for a moment. Then I glanced back at the store, and staring out at me from a window was the face of a girl. About 18. And if ever a face showed fear, there it was. Before I could move, she pulled back and away. Outside in the street, little groups of people stared at me, and when I looked back at them, they walked out of sight. Farther down the street, I saw Doris, and she was talking with a big, husky fellow, and I walked toward them.
Dan, what did you find out?
Nothing.
Oh, I knew it. Oh, Dan, this is Didge Lawson, Bart's best friend. Didge, this is Dan Holliday, my cousin.
How are you, Didge?
Fitting. Them yellow livers were scared, huh?
Yeah, looked like it.
Look here, mister. I ain't scared. If you want any help, I'll give it to you.
Thanks, Didge. But can you help?
Maybe. I got an idea.
An idea, Didge? About what?
Look here. Someplace out in the bayou is what's killing Bart.
In the bayou?
Yeah. I know that there bayou like a back of my own hand. Some funny things can go on out there, mister.
Like what?
I see the doll once, hanging from a tree, dressed up like a man of words, dressed up like Bill Dakin. Ain't long after that, Bill took sick. Pretty near died.
You saw that, Ditch? Mm. Why didn't you do something?
Me? I ain't gonna touch nothing like that. Them that touches it, they get sick and die.
You think that's what's happening to Bart? Is that it, Ditch?
Maybe.
I see. Well, thanks for offering to help.
That ain't nothing.
We better be getting back now, Dan.
Huh? Oh, yes, sure.
Glad to have met you, Dan. See you, yeah?
Yeah, I'll see you later.
Bye, Ditch.
Bye.
Doris.
Yes?
How good a friend is this DeBond?
Why, they grew up together.
And would he tell us if he knew who was doing this DeBond?
Oh, I'm sure he would.
Yeah, then we have someone to help us.
But I think he's really afraid, too.
He'd never admit it.
Do you think he'll be able to help?
That depends.
But what he said about that doll and Bill Dakin, did you believe it?
Yes, I did, because it's happened before.
Dan, you can't mean it. You can't mean it, because it's impossible.
So is the fact that Bart's dying with nothing wrong with him. But he is.
Then how can we stop it, Dan?
Well, I don't know yet. But we've got to find out today. Tomorrow may be too late. Let's get back to Bart. When we got back to Bart, I tried to get him to tell me who had told him he was doomed to die. But he wouldn't say. Bart had one more day to live unless we could find the evil thing that was preying on his mind. It was later that night, close to midnight. I couldn't sleep. I was lying on a cot when I heard a noise at my window. Who's that? Who is it? What the...
Shh. Don't talk loud, mister.
Who are you?
My name's Melissa. Please, mister, I gotta tell you something. If you want to help Bart...
Wait, I'll come right out.
No, you just gotta listen. I heard you talking in the store to my pop. You want to know about Bart?
What do you know? Come on, tell me.
Didge put the death on Bart.
Didge?
Even if he finds out I told you, he'd kill me.
He won't do anything of the kind, Melissa. Now, what do you know about this?
Everything was all right till she come here.
She? Miss Gordon?
Her. Didge got smitten with her. Her...
Oh, now, Melissa, we'll fix all that up. But you've got to tell me what you know, quickly.
When Bart took sick, I knowed it was something Didge had done. I followed him out to the bayou.
And?
5 times I followed him to Grandma Juno's place out there.
Grandma Juno? Who is she?
A witch.
Melissa, there's no such thing as a witch.
She is.
All right, let it go. What else do you know?
Didge gone out there again tonight.
Tonight? How do you know?
I saw him taking his boat out of the shack. Mister, he's gone out there tonight to see Grandma Juno. This'll be the last time. They'll twist the thread around Bart's neck, and tomorrow he'll be dead.
Melissa, can you take me out there?
Me? No, I ain't gone no more. I ain't. I'll take sick and die.
Wait right there. You and I are going into town.
What for?
Never mind. Just wait there. I awakened Doris, told her what was happening, and took her car, and Melissa and I drove into the village. Later, Dr. Brennan and I went out to the edge of the bayou and...
If a word of what I'm doing gets around, I'll be done for.
You've got to help, Doctor.
All right. Mm. Melissa!
What?
You sure that you can lead us to Grandma Juno's in the dark?
I think maybe so.
Well, come on, we're wasting time. Get in the boat, Doctor.
Okay. And for this, I got an M.D. degree. Chasing around in the black of midnight after a witch.
Ready?
I am. Go straight ahead until we come to the turn, then go left.
Oh, good. Ready, Doctor?
I gotta be.
All right. Now, no lights. And be as quiet as you can. Let's go. Maybe I'll live to be 100. Maybe I won't. But I'll never forget that midnight boat ride. All around us, the huge cypress trees jutted up in the moonless sky. The drooping Spanish moss brushed our faces, and it was too dark to see a foot in front. But Melissa, she knew what she was doing and where she was going. Once or twice, a dark shape in the water bumped against our rowboat and slithered away. Then...
It's right up ahead.
Well, I can't see a thing.
Melissa, you're sure?
I know it.
You can believe her, Dan. These people know their way around these bayous with their eyes closed.
Shh. Look.
There's a lantern up ahead.
There's Didge's boat.
Stop rowing, Doctor. Easy.
Oh, I'm gonna take sick and die.
No, you're not, Melissa.
Look.
Good heavens.
Up ahead, on a little island in the light of an old lantern, were Didge and an old woman. Didge was sitting on a log watching while the old woman crooned over a doll. Crooned over it and wrapped a string tightly around its grotesque neck. Silently, slowly, we got closer until we could hear her words.
On your throat, breathe and gasp. Breathe and gasp, you last, my son. Tighter on your throat. The devil's hand is clutching.
Melissa.
That does it.
Who's that?
Get away.
Come on, Doctor.
He'll shoot. He's got his gun.
He can't see us. Melissa, stay in the boat.
Stop where you are. Don't you come no closer. If you do, I'll...
Kill him, Dig. Duck him.
Honey, his gun. Don't let him get it.
Yes, do you, the devil. Dig. Dig.
Pick up that gun, Doctor.
You get it for this, mister. You get it.
Now give me that doll.
No!
Give it to me, I said.
No,
I can't. She'll knife you.
No, she won't. That's better. Now, let's get back to Bart, Doctor.
What about Didge?
He seems to like it out here. We'll let him enjoy it a while longer. Keep his gun.
Here, let me see that doll. Why? It looks like Bart LeFay.
Sure. It was Bart LeFay.
Huh?
Never mind now. Let's get back. This doll, it can't harm you now. Things like this can never harm anyone. It's in your mind. Look, I'll unwrap the string from its throat. You'll be all right.
That thing was doing it to me?
No, your mind was doing it, Bart. That's all. You'll get better now.
But what about you?
What about me?
Grandma Juno will get you.
No, she won't. Bart, believe me, there's nothing in the world like this can hurt you. So I'll go back home, and the worst that can happen will be my own fault.
Sure. Where's Doris?
Oh, I'll send her in when I leave.
I can't thank you rightly, Dan.
Yes, you can. Just remember what I told you, Bart. No harm can ever come to you unless you bring it on yourself.
What a nasty-looking little doll.
It's not pretty.
And he actually believed this was killing him?
Well, he knows better now.
Do you feel all right?
Of course. Why?
Well, I just hate to think of that terrible old woman sticking pins in you.
Oh, not a chance. Not a chance. Well, let me sit down and look at the mail.
Oh, Mr. Holliday, what's the matter?
I felt as though something stuck me.
Mr. Holliday,
Susie.
Oh, my knitting needles.
Yeah. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville. And this adventure was written by Clark Robley. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. Part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. Box 13 is a Mayfair production from Hollywood. Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.